The views expressed in this program are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of WVUD or the University of Delaware.
WVUD presents Campus Voices. Conversations with University of Delaware faculty, staff, and students about their teaching, research, service projects, and other interests. To introduce today's guest, here's your host, Richard Gordon.
Today on Campus Voices, Abby Sarfo, the trustee WVUD intern, and I are up in Old College Gallery, where we are speaking with two artists whose work is on display.
Yeah, hi, this is Donald McLaughlin. Dennis and I are both university graduates. You know, we both came through the program. Dennis as a graduate student, I believe, and I was an undergrad. So I think what's kind of interesting about this show is also we're the first living artists to show in here. I mean, we're not, you know, like we're not retiring from the department or anything like that. So I think this is kind of like a new, perhaps, direction for where they might be going here. If you come to the show, I'm the painter on view. Dennis has some paintings as well, but mostly he's clogging up the floor here with his beautiful revolving work here that needs to be seen.
Hi, Dennis Beach here. I'm a sculptor and a painter. This has been a really nice opportunity to show at the Old College Gallery, get a chance to come back and put some of my work up that, you know, part of the growing process was here at the University of Delaware.
I think your sculptures that sort of dominate the view as people come in.
Yeah, I tend to do about the same amount of both. Although lately I've been working with the sculpture a little more. It takes a little more time. And there's some beautiful floor space here to use. So, and it's been a great opportunity again. You know, I have both floor and some hanging pieces, which this is the biggest grouping of the hanging pieces, and I like the way they work together. I like the way they work together with Don's work and some of my work on the walls too. I think it, you know, helps enliven the space.
I think what's really interesting to Abby and me is we walk in here, we just think it's so cool. I mean, you've managed to put this exhibit together, call it Color and Form, and even though you work in different media, it works.
Well, it is kind of interesting. I mean, it turns out I had shown with Dennis before, but had not met him. And when we were paired up here, I found it interesting. You know, I got to see his work, do a studio visit, and came to the realization that this is going to work beautifully together, and that the works are going to comment on each other. There'll be an interesting kind of dialogue going on, and happily, people seem to have picked up on the reality of that.
Dennis, it looks like you both use, I won't say an identical palette, but you both use a very vibrant color palette.
Yeah, we do both use the strong high key colors. And, you know, that's something I've always been drawn to. And it's just interesting that we are grouped together. And that makes it work well together. You can play off things that are opposites, or you can work in the same realm, which is what's happening here, which I think especially in this, you know, sort of historic room that has a lot of, it has the opposite end of things. There's more browns, wood tones and things. And I think that kind of makes it exciting, you know, having that interplay between the two.
That's a good point. I mean, this gallery is a beautiful space, but it is traditional, brown, neutral, and then you guys come in.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're kind of popping the walls here with this work, which is kind of interesting. Dennis's work tends to lean more towards, you know, these like brilliant primary and secondary colors. And, you know, they're very eye-popping. I tend to, by and large, kind of mix down my paint a little bit just to make it a little more tonal. And there's a really kind of interesting, as I say, dialogue going on between the works.
Dennis, let's start with your four hanging contraptions. Tell us about them.
Well, the hanging contraptions are called, it's my spins series, because those are the titles, spins 1, 2, 3, and 4, which is a series I've been working on for a few years now. You know, art for me is a lot about playing, being able to try new things and exciting things. And the original sort of piece that I fooled around with this was really just a fooling around with little electric motors, propellers. It's the same kind of propeller that you use on a little rubber band airplane to fly through the air. Yeah. And solar cells, which I realized run off of lights, and all galleries have lights. So I started fooling with that whole, like, can I make things move with the lights of the gallery using a little propeller thing to kind of push it around with the air currents. And it became exciting. And so now, you know, I combine it. Some of these spinning pieces are really, I've done a fair amount of stripe paintings. In a way, they're a moving stripe painting. And then some of them, which have more three-dimensional pieces, are more spinning sculptures. And you know, they are sculptures, but... so for me, it's just it's an exciting thing to play with, and then the movement's always exciting.
The two by the entrance have very colorful stripes of color, and the two down by the far end looks like one is mirrored pieces, and
yes, one is mirrored plexiglass, and the reflective qualities are, you know, we all love reflections. We love looking at ourselves. We love looking at other things in the. And the other piece is actually polished aluminum tubes, which are somewhat reflective. And, you know, at different angles, you know, it's exciting with a show like this is you can get, you know, reflections of the work, you know, and the way they reflect the light around, again, kind of add some dynamics to the space.
I've got a question for Dennis. This is Don again. I was looking at the mirror piece, Dennis. I was wondering, did you ever see that film Lady from Shanghai? Are you familiar with that? It's an Orson Welles.
I don't think so.
There's a shootout in a house of mirrors at the end. It's got that kind of, and you've seen this, like, I think they've done it in James Bond movies and that kind of thing. And as I'm looking at this thing, also, the other question I have is whether you ever find yourself kind of, I mean, they're really hypnotic, this rotation of this color, and, you know, they're beautifully put together. Do you ever kind of just sit in a stupor looking at your own work?
Well, to be quite honest, I usually have one or two of these hanging in my studio. And, you know, one thing, no matter, you know, whether it's me or you, you know, going to a gallery or a museum, most of us don't spend hours there, you know. And it is nice, you know, we have our own work up at our own studios quite often. And these pieces are, you know, I don't go in to stare at them, but sometimes I can be in the middle of doing something else and kind of, you know, have that mental break and look over. And yeah, they, you know, whether I made it or not, they're very enjoyable.
Well, Dennis, since Donald has just commented on your work, is there one of his pieces you'd like him to talk about first?
In looking at his work, sometimes I have so many rules on what colors I can use and can't use that, for me, I like to look at people who, if they have rules, the rules are a little more expansive than mine. And so I look at the work and I wonder how the extended colors come into play, I guess.
Actually, you know what's funny? In putting these together, I used to teach color theory. And that can be a really rigid and very damaging thing for an art professor. I'm 60 now. I've been teaching since I was in my 40s. And one of the interesting things I found that what's damaging about color theory is knowing too much about it. And you can get into a very kind of rigid sense of how to apply colors, and I've seen people do that. And for me, it becomes learn color theory and then throw it out, you know, so that you're dealing with your own sort of intensely personal and private palette that you kind of conjure up. But I'm sort of influenced by different artists' palettes, and I kind of refer to that in here. There's a series of paintings here called the Berlin Series, which is the four paintings to your left as you enter the gallery space. And those come directly out of the experience of looking at the palette of German Expressionist art, which I never particularly enjoyed until later in life, never understood it. And it's cold, weird, sour color. And that kind of attracted me.
Well, it looks like a lot of your work is attracted to elliptical shapes.
It's funny you should say elliptical shapes. Very much so. I don't know how candid I can get about these, but specifically in the Berlin series, they came out of a series by the artist Kirschner, who did paintings of prostitutes on Berlin streets, and they were these kind of wasp-waist female figures. And also, those elliptical shapes, I can be candid. I sort of stole from Picasso that he used that form a lot.
Appropriated.
No, actually, I think it was T.S. Eliot that said, what is it, professional steal and non-professionals are influenced, you know, it's just kind of something to that effect. So a lot of those shapes you're referring to actually come from specific poses in Picasso's early cubism.
That's so. Very interesting, because I would have thought that it was your freehand adaptations of mathematical kind of shapes.
Well, I have no mathematical ability whatsoever. I call my wife on the phone to get simple math done. By the way, that's actually an interesting point that you raised. I couldn't do these because I couldn't be this precise. So Dennis needs, and this is, I'm kind of curious for you to address this, is how often do you kind of screw one of these up? Because they need to be really precise. Are they as precise as they seem to be?
You know, I always say that I aim for perfection, but it rarely happens, you know. But in the eye of the viewer, if you stand back far enough, they're perfect. we'll say. But I like the whole dialogue about the math, and because I've been accused of being very mathematical, which I enjoy math maybe a little more than you, Don. But I'm not a math hero, and so a lot of what I do, it looks very mathematically based, but it's sort of an intuitive, it's just repetition, you know. Yeah, maybe it's 3 inches between each thing, and I just repeat 3 inches between each thing a lot. So it's not really, now some of the spinning ones, yeah, I do have to figure out exactly how far apart they go, so that, but I've worked with clocks before, and clocks have a minutes all the way around. It's sort of that same kind of thing. But yeah, the math thing comes into it a little bit, but it's not where things start.
Let's walk to the one that's right behind you. This is, as you come into the old college gallery, it would be immediately on your left, and you have it called Drift Number 24.
Yeah, Drift Number 24 is the title because I've done a whole series of drift pieces, which sort of refer to the way that nature affects the physical world. The wind, the water, whether the wind's blowing over sand or snow, whether water is washing over at the beach, washing over the sand in sandbars, those ripples that affect or that show up.
Yeah.
They're really beautiful. They're really quite often geometric. Quite often they aren't there for real long. And so that's kind of, and both in paintings and in sculpture, so when I have this repetitive curve, smooth repetitive curve, that's the Drift series. And this one isn't necessarily the 24th one. It actually has 24 pieces. That's where, just to explain the title a little bit, this is the second of the more sculptural pieces I've done with this idea. And they're really exciting to work with. Almost everything I do, and you know, this is a good place to point this out, I take the same element, and this is what happens in growth in nature and things, the way cells are formed. And there's a lot of the same things repeated over and over with just slight variations. But basically the same piece of wood I've made over and over again, and then I've painted it a little differently. And so that repetition, I think it can help you kind of, in a good way, lose focus when you're looking at something like that. And that's one of the things I kind of aim for, you know. And a lot of times it really is just do it and see how it works. If you use some of those elements that are used in both music and other arts, it can be a very strong force in enjoying things.
As we look at this and sort of go from left to right, we can see the colors changing, but also it's like you're tracking 4 different curves. They go from piece to piece.
Yeah, and you know, one of the exciting things that happens with the lighting is besides the curves that I've made originally, the shadows that happen on the walls, and the lighting effects are, you know, of course, visual art is all about light reflecting off of pieces, whether it's a painting or a sculpture, and you know, again, that's what makes them exciting.
Now, Don, let's walk over to, I think this is my favorite of yours, this one over here with what looks like a French flag caught inside of an ellipse.
that's actually very interesting that you brought up the French flag, because all throughout this show there are, I consider to be 1, 2, 3, I don't know, 4, 5, like six of these are sort of somewhat flag paintings, I call them. So there's a kind of a, there's kind of a, like a semi sort of political agenda to these. This particular piece here is entitled Clown Country. So this is Clown Country and Clown Country flag. You can read whatever you want into that. The reason why I brought up sort of talking about the German thing before is I had mentioned this before at the opening that we were asked to speak. And I'm very interested in the history of the Weimar Republic. And the Weimar Republic was, of course, you know, Germany before the Nazis sort of lowered the boom. And it was a kind of a country in free fall at that point that chose a disastrous decision to pull them out of the free fall. And things, ideas like that kind of go through my head constantly. So the fact that you picked up on, you know, the red, white, and blue there, you know, very much so. But there is a sense of a French flag being in this.
Now, these two Clown Country pictures are very different. I mean, the Clown Country flag has what looks like it could be a formal flag with four colors superimposed over a really sort of a vibrant combination of green shapes and background, and just Clown Country has got a lot of, they really try to do pyramid shapes or...
I do tend to use this pyramid shape started to appear in my work at some point, and I was not quite sure. I don't really have what I would consider one of the pyramid pieces, but I started working with this shape, and it pops up here a couple of ways. But a lot of these are actually just, I come up with just a simple color idea to begin it, like I make do the flag, and then to improvise everything else. So everything else becomes, I use the word, it's kind of an unpleasant word and has unpleasant connotations, but like a metastasis. It just keeps
expanding.
It's like a malignant growth of color that keeps expanding and kind of where one color comments on the color that it happens to be next to. So I just kind of, invent that as I go along.
Oh, I don't think they're malignant at all. I think these are beneficial explosions of color.
Well, I would say that, but there's something where like a particular color will meet its border color, and they'll almost be, that's where the color theory stuff comes in, hostile to each other in some way, shape, or form. I appreciate you saying that, but I don't necessarily consider these sort of like maybe beautiful paintings or anything. You know, they're kind of odd, I think, in a lot of ways.
Now, another thing, Dennis's work, and we'll talk to him about it again in just a minute, is very precise. And like these two Clown Country pictures that we're looking at now, they have obvious signs of brushwork, dripping paint, little areas that look like, oh, I'll just sort of stop here, not go all the way out to the edge of the linen.
Yeah, actually, it's funny you should say that, because that's a little affectation I stole from one of my favorite artists, which was Paul Cézanne, who often left unfinished raw canvas. And, you know, he did that, Jasper Johns does that, Bryce Martin does that. And I just started realizing I don't really need to completely fill in a color space. You know, it suddenly takes on a whole different kind of energy to just stop at a certain point.
And energy, you're right. I mean, all of a sudden in the middle of Clown Country, these very straight and geometric shapes just sort of fade out.
Yeah, they do. Actually, what I was doing there, I'm making this up as I go along, I'm literally painting myself into a corner, because I don't know what's coming up next. You know, I'm constantly, one of the things I need to do is I need to surprise myself. It needs to be like every day needs to be, you know, like you get up, you know, you kind of do the dishes and you eat a particular breakfast and you drive to a particular place. You know what I mean? Like you have a kind of a routine. And when I get to the studio, I need to kind of leave there with a sense of it's kind of a happy accident or surprise.
You sound like you're talking about painting with jazz.
It's funny you should talk about that painting with jazz. I mean, obviously, that jazz, I'm a huge music fan. I always listen to music while I paint. It's just always there. So it becomes kind of musical in that sense. Sometimes I actually wonder whether these wind up being illustrations of a particular musical theme that I'm listening to, you know, which could be a Miles Davis album or a Jimi Hendrix album or something. You know, it suddenly it starts picking up weird rhythms from the music itself.
Dennis, do you improvise as you work on your things, or do you, or it looks like it's a little bit more, maybe it starts off brainstorming and then comes together as a more orderly presentation?
That's a good way to put it. I work, I don't use a sketchbook too much, especially on the sculptural things. I use a lot of fooling around with things from my scrap box, leftover pieces from other pieces, mm-hmm. putting them together. And at that point, it's more, you know, working with ideas. Maybe an idea that I saw when I was working on another piece, I've tried to revisit something that, you know, because when you do pick a direction, whether you're painting or whether you're building something, you know, as you're doing whatever you're doing, you may be thinking of, well, I could go this way, I could go that way, but today I'm veering off to the left, and maybe next time I'll go straight ahead with it, with that. So that kind of thing happens. And then, and you know, there's a point, especially with the repetitive pieces, where I have to sort of, where I do say, okay, this is where I'm going. But I'm also a little surprised that things happen, good, bad, or in making things that, you know, do change things sometimes. So in some ways, there's a lot of planning. The planning doesn't always go as planned. But in the end, you know, so sometimes I do end up, and it takes a little while for me to maybe fight against this change that happens. I'm like, well, wait, it wasn't supposed to be that way. But then I'm like, I look at it, it's like, wait, that's fine.
Tell us about this big installation right in the middle of the floor.
This piece is called Fallen Column. And the reason it's called Fallen Column is when I first made this piece, it was actually a vertical piece with I don't remember now, about 30 individual pieces that make up the piece. I do a lot of things in a modular way, a lot of, again, same pieces over and over. And so I made this column that had, there's a little gap in each circle, I guess you'd call it, donut type piece. And that gap would go around the piece vertically and spiral around to the top. And so you could just get a glimpse of the inside, which has a much more raw surface than I usually use, which actually shows the pigmented epoxy that I laminate things with. And, well, you know, and there's a thing when you commit to making a sculpture, it takes time. And you don't see it till the end. And, you know, it was fine, but it didn't really do as much for me as I had hoped. To be quite
when
honest.
It was vertical.
Yes, when it was vertical, when it was just called column. And, you know, so I you know, had it up for a while and looked at it here and there. And then, you know, one day I was just like, you know, let me, you know, and maybe this is a little bit of improvisation comes in. You know, I thought, what else can I do with this, you know? And that's where I started fooling with it in a horizontal way. And that's what you're seeing now, the result of that. And so it's called Fallen Column because, you know, if you make a very orderly column and it falls over, it'll fall very orderly. So, but I really like what's happening with the spacing and the, again, that repetition. There's different views you can get down and kind of look through along. There's a lot of different things that happen, which is what can happen with sculpture, you know, a lot of different views and angles.
It's going to say something kind of interesting about these pieces here of Dennis's on the floor, which was at the opening. We had a dance performance. They brought in some dance students and some people who were actually dance from University of Michigan, I believe, were dance majors. They had about four of them came in to choreograph a piece. They're out here doing things. And some people brought children. And I noticed children were interacting with Dennis's work, you know, like they were creating their own spontaneous dances, you know, under these moving pieces around them and everything. And I was thinking, actually, this whole show looks like some kind of really weird circus, you know, between my work and his work. You know, there's, you know, I work with this kind of like mottled, almost circus banner color, you know, and Dennis's stuff sort of is very playful in that regard. Sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to throw that in.
No worries. Fallen Column is made out of what?
Almost all of my pieces are made out of plywood, and I layer the plywood. I make it thicker by laminating it together, and generally I use epoxy that I put color in. I put artist pigment in. So there's usually a little band of actual color where the pieces of plywood are laminated together. That's how I get a thickness. I also paint on plywood, so most of the paintings are painted on plywood. So my materials don't change a lot, and then the sculptures are generally painted with acrylic paint also. So generally, except the spinning pieces have a few different materials in them, but generally I use plywood and acrylic paint to do most of what I do.
Now, you've got three that are up on the wall, and I think that they're, the way I respond to them is sort of I'm where I'm standing and where my eye is, I'm going to get something out of the way the colors interact. There are two things that look like targets, and then we have one thing that looks like it's made out of material you'd make wooden beach chairs out of.
Okay. Okay, yeah, yeah. Yeah, the one you're referring to that looks a little like a beach chair, we'll call that. Again, I've done a fair amount of stripe paintings. In fact, the target ones I sometimes think of as just round stripes. So that was one, the large one you're talking about on the wall, which is called Stripes, is I decided to make individual stripes rather than paint stripes on a larger panel. And, you know, back for a moment to what we were, when you were talking about Don's flag painting, I was noticing what you were talking about, that how it's very geometric in parts, and the color relationship is always important, and Don was mentioning that, how those pyramid shapes change depending on what color you have, the color relationship right next to each other, and that's exactly what I'm working with in the stripe paintings, and I think that's what you were speaking of when you were talking about looking at the pieces, is that viewpoint and the way the colors react in your eye and in your brain.
Dennis, I've got a question for you. You grew up in Maryland, right?
So I grew up all over. That's basically where I'm from.
It's on you. Okay. I was just wondering, actually, how whether growing up you were aware of, like, the Washington School, which worked in stripes, and, like, the circular pieces, like, Kenneth Nolan was part of that.
Yes.
Gene Davis, those guys. Anne Truitt. That was a whole different kind of situation from New York. I mean, I grew up here in Delaware, and we had the Brandywine tradition. So in some sense, my stuff is even kind of reacts to that. I'm wondering if you were aware of that whole kind of...
I was very aware. I actually did live in the D.C. suburbs of Maryland. When I started getting interested in art and realized I could do stuff and wanted to do stuff, which was in my late 20s, actually. And I did become aware of the Washington Color School and enjoyed it a lot. And it took me a while to realize that it was affecting, you know, some of my, once I got out of undergrad and was actually working on my own, some of my early paintings were acrylic on raw canvas, which goes back directly to Kenneth Nolan, Sam Gilliam a little bit. And Anne Truitt was a big influence on the sculpture. So the whole group, you know, and you don't always realize these relationships, but certainly looking back, it's easy to see and sort of the mindset. And it's interesting that very few of those people were actually alive when I was studying, but you feel some sort of kinship, I guess you'd say.
We're thrilled that we've been in the Old College Gallery here with Donald McLaughlin and Dennis Beach, whose exhibition, Color Form, will be at the University Galleries through December 11th. And university museums are open Wednesday through Sunday, noon through 5 p.m., and they're open late on Wednesdays until 8 p.m.
By the way, this show received its name from one of the great emeritus professors here, a guy named Steve Tanis. When I had mentioned to Steve, I said, Dennis and I are doing a show, and Steve, being a veteran teacher, sat back, he tends to crystallize things, and he said, color and form. You know,
Well, I think your artworks are very different, but yet they match. I mean, they really complement each other in here. Thank you.
Thank you. This has been great.
Thank you. I enjoyed this.
Thanks for listening to Campus Voices. The views expressed on this program are those of the individual guests and do not necessarily reflect the official views or policies of WVUD or the University of Delaware. For more information about Campus Voices and to find archive copies of this and other episodes, visit our website. Using all lowercase letters, go to www.udel.edu/campusvoices. We invite you to tune in every Thursday morning at 8:30 for Campus Voices on 91.3 FM, WVUD, and WVUD HD1 Newark, or online at wvud.org.